Same on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Thursday, the 14th of October. This is Game On with John Kenny filling in for Marie tonight. Coming up today, Jeff Shepherd updates us on the vaccine controversy that's hit the NBA in the United States of America.
It's the stupidest thing that I think I've encountered with NBA play. Like, you gonna sit up there and not play and not take a vaccine that evidently it's not you. You don't have a problem with it, according to the reports. You just want to give a voice to the voiceless? Really?
David Snides in studio with the latest on Steve Bruce's future. Plus, we're talking League of Ireland as the domestic season heats up. Bernard Jackman's in studio too. He'll round up the latest in the URC action as Connacht take on Munster side minus RG Snyman.
To be honest, he's probably one of the most mentally tough guys I've ever met. He's had a horrific last 12 months, and then, you know, to top it off, he plays 30, 40 minutes of rugby and then it happens to him again. So the resilience he's showing just from a mental standpoint is to me astounding.
Plus, we'll hear from the Irish camp as they finish their T20 World Cup cricket preparations on high with a win against Bangladesh today. Neil Rock, their 21-year-old wicketkeeper, will join us. We want you to get in touch. You can text us 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. That's at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
And a very good evening to David Snyder and also to Bernard Jackman. Hi, guys. How's the week been so far, David?
Evening. It's been good. Positive from an Irish football perspective, which has been nice, especially as someone obviously covers the team. It's actually been good to discuss a lot of positives around Irish football at the moment with the senior team, anyway.
Yeah, goal machine all of a sudden, isn't it, Mr. Robinson?
I was just saying to Bernard, like, before we came
what on. He had one goal in 20 games and now he's got five in the last two.
Yeah, and even for West Brom, he kind of hasn't been in great goal scoring form. Obviously, they're doing very well, but yeah, like last week I was on here saying obviously he hasn't got his vaccine, maybe Stephen Kenny should take a stand and leave out lads who aren't vaccinated just to kind of like lead the way a little bit, and then he goes and scores five goals in two games and just shows how he's actually become a bit of a talisman now for Ireland. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens between now and November and the next international window to see who gets on with West Brom, because he's going to be someone now that a lot of Ireland fans are going to be looking out for.
Sure, COVID is obviously very much back in the news again, Bernard, and we'll be talking to Neil Rock later on. He's 21-year-old new Irish wicketkeeper, and he's played today against Bangladesh in the match they won before they kick off the World Cup this coming Monday. He had COVID during the year, and he said didn't hit him too hard. Thankfully, he lost his taste for a while, but he has been vaccinated. Is this permeating through the world of rugby now as well?
It's okay at the moment. The incidence rate in the professional game in Ireland is incredibly low. I think they came out with a stat that 98% of the players were vaccinated. There doesn't seem to be any issues with close contacts or failed.
Or anybody making stands?
No one's made a stand in Ireland anyway. I think some of the Premiership clubs in England, there has been players making a stand, but they're trying to get everybody on the same page. So we've been lucky. The URC is building nicely. Some good games this weekend, and the only real blip is obviously RG Snyman's injury, which is obviously a huge blow to him and to Munster.
Yeah, you've been following the fortunes of the Irish.
Yeah, I have. Yeah,
well,
I know. I'd love to see them getting. I've been in a position that Stephen Kenny was in, and where you couldn't get a result, and it's not nice. So I was delighted to see them get two good wins, and hopefully now they can build on it.
Yeah, these four that won the World Cup actually at the celebrations. You know, the relief.
I'd say that'd be a relief, because
Do you know what? Relief can sometimes be as good as relief in a tricky situation, and like say staying up in a relegation battle or winning after a long period of losses can sometimes be more invigorating than, you know, winning a trophy or qualifying for, you know, Champions League, etc. And it's hard as a bystander to comprehend it, but the pressure and the negativity that's around the team when they're losing, you know, so on such a big losing run is really hard to shake off. And you know when you win how important it is, and hopefully how things are starting to change.
Sure.
Got that sense as well from Shane Duffy, especially after the game in Azerbaijan, winning a competitive game. He was talking about just how much that's going to breed confidence among the young players who've come through, who haven't won a game. And like, because he made the point, obviously, when he was coming in through the squad, like, Ireland were winning big games, beating the world champions Germany, getting to the Euros, doing well, actually beating Italy there and coming so close to actually knocking out France. So, like, even on, like, and some people might scoff because, yeah, it's Qatar, and but the manner of the performance, having built on getting that competitive win, you would hope that in the next window you'd see it kind of even build on a bit more and just trying to maintain some momentum, because it just hasn't been there for the
best sure, winning is a mentality, all right. We talk more to Bernard Jackman about the weekend's rugby. Starts on Friday. We've got the Ulster match live on RT as well, and Connacht against Munster is also live on RT Radio and TV as well. But Steve Bruce, David, looks like he's still in a gig for the time being at Newcastle. I'm reading a bulletin earlier on today to say that the new owners say they're a little bit confused about all of this. They actually met him, said thanks very much for keeping us up, and lo and behold, he's going to be in charge for the game against Spurs the weekend. Is he a dead man walking?
Well, you said reading the bulletin, I thought he was going to get the bullet. Like, he during the week, there was the pictures of him when he was called in for that meeting, and yeah, it just seemed absolutely inevitable that he was going to be relieved of his duties. Like, even before the takeover, you're kind of thinking, was he done to actually deserve to stay in the job? Like, they were blessed with their run at the end of last year where he stayed up. They had, I think, four or five wins in the last seven games, which was absolutely crucial because they were really, really struggling. And then this year they've just not built on anything whatsoever. And yeah, when you think, I remember just before coming on air last year, the Newcastle fans joyously outside St James's Park because they have their new owners. There was talk of Conte coming in. There was even suggestions of Brendan Rodgers. He quickly denied that, although there's probably some Celtic fans who would be chuckling at the thought of Brendan Rodgers staying loyal to his to club, considering what he did to Celtic only a few years ago. So I think he's going to get to his 1,000th game. So whether or not this is a case of the Saudi Arabians actually showing a bit of leniency with him, and then once they get the man they want and get him in place, then that could be happening, because you're going
to
have...
Well, this is really down to the overall headman who hasn't been around. It's those two whose name escapes me, who are actually very much to the forefront of man and wife team to putting this whole thing together.
Yeah, well,
they're the ones who've done the meeting with Bruce, haven't they?
Well, that's it. Amanda Staveley has been... For the last number of years, this was a takeover that could have happened a few years ago. We're probably talking 4 years ago now at this stage. And it's eventually come to fruition. She stayed kind of in the background a little bit, but she's still been a public figure. It's been quite strange. And eventually she's got this through. And this, like, it's going to be a case of basically making sure they have the proper plan in place and not rushing too quickly. It's kind of shows that they're not, maybe you've seen this before, where maybe new owners have come in, and we saw with Man City over a decade ago where a lot of money was wasted very, very quickly. But the fact that maybe they haven't rushed and just got Bruce out of the way with having a proper plan in place means they're obviously clearly waiting until they make sure that they have what target they want in, because that man's gonna have to get his feet under the table before the transfer window, draw up a list of targets, and like get an idea of where is he going to need to improve in the squad. And it's very clear that they're going to need Rodgers.
He won't keep his job, though, you don't think?
I'd be very surprised. Obviously, listen, wins. If he wins the weekend against Spurs, that might buy him a bit more time. If he doesn't, I'd be very surprised if he's in the job by the end of the week.
Sure. What is the Unite, the Union Champions Cup? I know what it is, but can you explain it?
So basically, obviously, it's a cross-border competition, obviously, between the clubs in the League of Ireland and the Northern Irish Premiership.
We've had this before with the Satanta Cup.
With the Satanta Cup, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for a while, when the prize money was going there, it was like it started off at 350 grand and it was going really well, dropped to about 70 grand, and then interest waned, and then there was the differences in the calendars between the League of Ireland clubs and the Northern Irish clubs, and it was kind of like in pre-season for the North's clubs.
And it was backed by a television company as well. Exactly. So when their interest waned too.
And obviously Satanta, they had their issues. So in the last couple of years, it would have been 2019 when this first started, and it was just basically the champions play up against each other in a one-off game. So it was a two-legged game, and Dundalk won over two legs against Linfield 7-1. So what they've done now is they kind of slightly expanded it. So you've got a regionalised semi-final. So Rovers obviously won the league last year. They're going to play the team who finished second in the League of Ireland, which at the moment is looking like it's probably going to be St. Pat's, are 7 points clear. Unless there's a bit of a downfall there, they should get that. And then you have
Rovers against Pats. That's what we're talking about.
It's looking like that from the League of Ireland perspective. And then obviously,
okay, so the League of Ireland, that's their semi final.
That's there. And then you have Linfield, Coleraine will be in the semi final north, and then the final will be played in December. Like, the big thing,
I believe it's December the 4th at the Aviva.
Because obviously last year, and that's going to be a one off. Because last year
didn't play 2019, it was a two legged affair, wasn't it?
Then obviously because of COVID, it was delayed and sort of deferred. So,
but there's a few quid in this, isn't there?
Well, see, this is it, and this is what, and like, Bernard will know this as well, for a lot of the times when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of actually the bottom line for professional clubs, getting that extra few quid. So if you win this, you're going to get €60,000, which for a League of Ireland clubs is absolutely will be very, very welcome. If you get an extra 25,000 for the runners up. So considering the prize money in the League of Ireland, if you win the League of Ireland, obviously you're going to be talking in and around 110,000. €10,000. The big money is in European qualification, like getting through the rounds in Europe. Like, you know, like balls for what they would have done during the summer, you're talking the guts of over $750,000 to over $750,000. So that just shows you,
which is huge for a part of the club,
which is absolutely absolutely huge. So then to get this added, like Philip on top of that, it's going to be interesting. And it kind of plays in as well with the last few years, where obviously before COVID happened, we had kind of Kieran Lucid and his steering group looking at the possibility of the All-Ireland League, and it was beginning to get a bit of momentum. Like, there was still obviously a bit of hesitancy from say clubs both sides of the border, because they wanted to see what, how is this going to affect teams qualifying for Europe because of who's.
That's gone very quiet, hasn't it?
Well,
main reason for that
would be because of COVID. Essentially just put the mockers on everything, and it was only Kieran Lewis was only saying it again earlier this year that kind of just it's about kind of build momentum about that again. And I suppose seeing what happens with this and the interest in the United, because there's going to be fans back in stadiums, and just seeing how it develops. At the moment, there's no plans for this the Union Cup to be expanded, but it'll just maybe give people another little taster to see if there's much appetite for it.
Yeah, but that expands the season then for after the FAI Cup final into December for the likes of Rovers and or Pats or Linfield or whatever. Well, Linfield, obviously, they'll be back in their season because they play during the winter.
Yeah.
But from the League of Ireland clubs, I was reading the article today in the Irish Independent by Daniel McDonald, saying that the League of Ireland is set to pause for international breaks next year in a change which will mean the shortening of the off-season and an earlier start as well. There's been a lot of gnashing of teeth about that June 2 weeks off in the middle of summer.
Mid-season break.
Now they're talking about breaks in March, June and September.
Essentially for the internationals. So you even had it last week where because of the rise of underage Irish players playing for Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland for the under
21s. Yeah, because there was only one game last week.
One game last week, and I suppose it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. The issue, I suppose, for some clubs now is going to be, especially in the League of Ireland, obviously it could be slightly different in the North, is clubs would predominantly, a lot of clubs would predominantly have 40 to 42 week contracts for their players. Just there's been situations up until even recently where clubs could be in for pre-season and their players might not be getting paid for the majority of it, and it could only be for maybe a 2 week period lead into the season where they'll start getting paid. So this is going to be, clubs have always kind of rallied against it a little bit in terms of a longer season because they knew it was going to cost more money. Now they're going to have to be a bit more creative with their contracts and will they stagger them, will they be kind of obviously a less basic wage per week
because the PFAI here have been looking for a 52 week contract,
well just standardise
yeah.
exactly
standardise it
pretty much in terms
because
of,
a lot of players, and they know it themselves, David, that at the end of the season the PFAI have done it for the last couple of years. They brought some people in basically to put them in the shop window. Here's a couple of games, they went away to Sweden and places like that. They're not doing that at the moment, but it's just to try and showcase the players who can't get contracts, who are out of contract. So they want to try and stop all of that, don't they?
Well, that's absolutely. And you mentioned that about this, like that trip to Sweden. Like that was going on for a few years. The FIPRO, I remember going on one of those trips about 4 or 5 years ago, where you've got a group of lads who basically haven't been picked up, haven't finished the season. Like, because it's not uncommon for lads to obviously have to go and find jobs or even sign on the dole when the season would finish in November time or October time, even up until recently. And you see lads and you're like, they have to go travelling to play in a tournament. I remember going to an indoor tournament and there's like teams from say Norway there's like teams from Sweden there, and there's all these, and it just gives you a sense, it really opened my eyes to just the nature, the cutthroat nature for like all these lads who are just thrown into, it's like a meat market essentially.
Yeah.
And like there's scouts there from different clubs, there's different agents there, and it was not that it was bizarre, but it was just really kind of opened my eyes to kind of what some of these lads have to go through to actually try and have a career and just even stay in the game. And then
does that happen in rugby?
Yeah, I'm not where you get all the guys off contract, but certainly players. I actually had one of the Irish in their 20s from this Six Nations, which played in June, July, on to me today, and he's nutting for him in Ireland. He's potentially an opportunity to go to the MLR, which is the new Major League Rugby in the States, but he's hoping, an agent told him he can get him into Pro D2 club in France. And you know, these kids, they probably have to go trial somewhere, you know, and maybe pay their own flight, and sometimes the decision is could be made before you even get there that they've gone go with someone else, but they've agreed to the trial. Like, it's a tough one. It's sometimes a case of how long can you stay in the fight, how long can you survive, can you have family support to be able to keep
cope with it as well. But
yeah, cope with it. Can you cope with it mentally? Or and you know, and there's been great stories where people have gone through that process and come out the other end and got back into professional, like at the top end. But unfortunately, it's a really tough game, because the way the French league and the and American league and the Premiership work in England is there's an onus on local players. The clubs, effectively, if they give a young English qualified player, for example, let's call up with England, they get credits back in terms of money at the end of the year based on the fact of how many they have. So you'd have to be a lot better than someone who's a local to be able to get that contract, if you know what I mean. So there's no problem with the top end players who have a really good CV getting foreign player spots, but as a youngster trying to prove yourself, you know, it's not am I a little bit better than him, it's like am I so much better than him that I can afford a premium that they get back from him for being a local player, if that makes sense.
Yeah, is your agent good enough?
Yeah, exactly.
And on that with the agents, they go, I remember doing an interview only a few years ago with a lad who was at a championship club in the UK, and he would have only been coming towards the end of his contract. He got told a week before his contract was finishing up that he was going to be getting released. So his agent set up a couple of trials for him with different clubs in the UK, and he was 19, 20, and he went down to one trial, got injured, and obviously limped out, and then had another trial maybe less than a week later, knew he was still injured but wasn't going to turn down the chance to play in the game because he was, as you say, wanting to fight, stay in the game. Gets injured again, he had driven down himself, was staying in like a travel inn in one of these hotels. Literally, he has his little Vauxhall car set that he packed himself, literally all his possessions in it. Agent stops taking his phone calls. He has to try and arrange, well, how do I get home? He's literally driving from the south of England to Holyhead, has to tell his mum and dad on the phone, bawling his eyes out, that I'm coming home. And in the space of a week, he's gone from being a professional footballer to back in Dublin, having experienced that. And you're kind of thinking, do you wonder why some of these lads are just totally broken when they come home in the UK? Like, that's only one story, and there's thousands of these stories.
Sure, we've heard them all throughout the years. Before I let you go, David, just a quick wrap about the Eritrea League Player of the Month. Georgie Kelly's won it again. That's four in a row now for Bohemians, who are not winning the league. And I saw one or two disgruntled tweets from Shamrock Rovers fans in particular saying, hang on a second, we're top of the league and we haven't won one of these Player of the Month awards in a couple of years.
I know, it's incredible. And I suppose it's one of them where obviously Georgie Kelly, he's top scorer in the league, 18 goals now, he's out on his own league now as a top scorer. And he really caught the eye with just a tremendous goal against Derry City. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's worth just checking. But
this is a guy Rovers fans, Rovers fans, when he was with Pats.
And this is, and do you know what? It just goes to show you again, we're talking about like staying in the fight in football. Like Stephen Kenny signed him for Dundalk.
Yeah.
Doesn't really work out from there. He can't get into the team. Patrick Hoban, like just sensational striker there, just on form. Then he goes to Pats, can't score. Then he goes to Bohemians and it just clicks. And everything is rosy for him. But listen, Rovers fans can probably console themselves that he could win the league. And it could be done and dusted, but it's not done and dusted really, but pretty much effectively done by Monday if results go their way.
Ironically against Bowes.
Ironically against Bowes. It'd be even sweeter to keep a clean sheet, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. David Snide, listen, thanks for joining us and talking about football. Bern is going to stay with us and we're going to talk rugby after these.
Green Farm. Get back on track after summer with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on. Rugby.
And Bernard Jackman is still with us. John Kenny in for Marie tonight until 7 o'clock. We're going to talk about the United Rugby Championship first. We got Ulster against Emirate Lions. That's this coming Friday in Belfast. It kicks off at 7:35. It's live on RT2. Then we got Leinster against the Scarlets, which is TG Cahir's game. That's kicking off at 5:15 on Saturday. And the other provincial sides, from our point of view, Munster against Connacht, the big one. Connacht away at Thomond Park in Limerick. That's a game also live on RT2 television that kicks off at 7:35. And if you want to hear the commentary on that, Michael Corcoran, my colleague, will be doing the commentary on that for RT Radio 1 in this part of an extended Saturday Sport. Texts come in here. It says, could you please ask Bernard Jackman what has changed in provincial rugby? The two Italian teams are poor. The Welsh team's not great. The South African's not good. It was much the same last year.
Yeah, it's a fair point from the listener. I'm surprised. I thought the Welsh were better. I thought they'd started round one and round two in decent shape. But to lose three home games at the weekend, for the Scarlets to be well beaten by a Munster, experimental Munster team, for the Cardiff to lose to the Bulls, who'd been very poor week one and week two, and for the Ospreys to lose to the Sharks, that was a big blow to them. Now the Dragons, in fairness, came to Connacht and got a great win. The Scots again looked okay in round one and two, but maybe it was who they were playing. And yeah, it's worrying. I think
The only Irish provincial sides, this is a man from the outside looking in, is it the only Irish provincial sides that are taking this thing seriously?
No, they're taking it seriously, but they just seem to be behind the eight ball in terms of catching up. So I think I would be tolerant to South Africans, and it was great to see the South Africans get a couple of wins and a draw at the weekend, because they will get better. They have their Springboks to come in, they're readjusting to the league. But you know, for the Welsh, the Scots in particular, Benetton are back to a certain extent. You know, they've had two good wins. Zebra are pretty poor. I think it's really important the Welsh and Scots bounce back this week. I think, you know, it has to. The qualification system for Europe is more competitive now, so the Scots are in a pool with the Italians. The Welsh are their own little mini group. The Irish are a mini group, and the South Africans will come in a year's time. There's no excuse. The Welsh should be better. They cut players' wages by 25% in COVID, and they didn't reduce the budget. So in theory, they had 25% more to spend, and they've managed to bring back some decent internationals from England. Hopefully it was just a bad week for them, to be honest, because look, this competition is going to live or die by its competitiveness, and with, you know, Munster, Ulster and Leinster at the top at the moment, it's a bit of deja vu, and we need it to be harder to win, and we need to be tested. And that's, in certain ways, that's why it was good for Leinster to have that very difficult game in Newport the week before, because they had to learn how to win a tight game. And that's what the criticism has been, you know, of our excuse behind Leinster not being able to win Europe, is because they only get tested two or three times a year. But I'd like to hope that changes. I think it will, but I can see why you know, that texter is a little bit worried.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of focus on it here now, because RTE and TG Car are sharing responsibility in terms of covering it, and also RTE Radio as well. So we've a lot of coverage of the game here. What about the South Africans? I know they've just been taken off the red list in the UK. Does this, where do we go with that?
So my understanding is, and this is I think is very unfair, they are off the red list, so in theory the Northern Hampshire team should go there.
Yeah.
So they play their final round of this tour this weekend, then they have 3 weeks without a match, and on that third week they were supposed to host the Northern Hemisphere teams, because they weren't.
Can you see the Northern Hemisphere teams going down there, lock, stock and barrel?
My understanding is that they've already been told you're playing the next block of home games for the South Africans in Italy, and the URC aren't changing on that. Now, I would say, look, obviously the teams will say player safety, but
so the onus is on the South African teams to travel, and not so much on the
yes at the moment. Now, obviously, hopefully by in January, but like, it's just so hard for them. They've been away for 4 weeks. They get home and then they go back and play their home games in Italy, which is effectively away games. You know, and now I know the Welsh, Scots and Irish won't have fans there, but still, it's a big ask to be away from your family for that long.
Why do they need the South Africans in this competition?
They brought money. So in terms of TV audience, it's a big TV audience. SuperSport have thrown quite a bit of money into the pot. The South Africans were fed up of the travel that was involved, even though there's travel in this. It's at least the same time zone, there's only an hour time difference. I think it's the start of potentially seeing the South Africa join the Six Nations in a couple of years, and
moving out away from the Championship.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a strong chance of it. But now, if when a domestic game has gone from it, you know, the calendars aren't aligned, you know. Yeah. So it will make a lot more sense in the next couple of years. But look, I think they've been brought in, you know, they brought in money, but they also should bring quality. You know, they should bring quality. You know, and it's been a disappointing start, but I think they have the ability and the player pool to be more than competitive in this if we give them time.
Sure. All right, let's concentrate on the games this weekend. Ulster against the Emirate Lions. That's the first one, which is live on RTE television this weekend. How do you think that's going to go? Ulster have actually named an unchanged team from the win against Benetton last Friday, so they seem to be happy enough with the way things are going from their point of view.
Yeah, well, they're 15 points from a maximum of 15 the first three rounds. This is a game they'd expect to win. The Lions, are the weakest of the South African teams, even though they have got a win. They got a win away to Zebra in round one. They're a dangerous side, but they're very much in transition. The Lions are a young side, and you would have to fancy Ulster to be... I actually think Ulster will go and get an attacking bonus point again and have 20 from 20. It's a settled team. Now, Ulster have a lot of injuries. I think Dan McFarland has 14 or 15 injuries at the moment, but these are the guys who are fit and they've been playing week in, week out, and they're shaping up nicely. And obviously there's been huge hype about Nathan Doak at nine, two man the matches, played for Ireland under-20s in the Six Nations in June, looks so composed. He's like a mini Ruan Pienaar, just seems to have time, has a bit of an air of arrogance about him, plays like that. And, you know, with John Cooney injured, he's taking his chance. But there's another very good young Ulster player coming through, David McCann, the number 8 as well. So viewers should watch out for both those players. The rest of them, they know, the likes of, you know, Billy Burns, Rob Herring, you know, Sam Carter, the captain. But those two young lads, Nathan Doak and David McCann, for me, are worth watching.
Yeah, Ulster for you. Then Leinster against Scarlets. Leinster playing a team that lost... to Munster, didn't they?
Yeah, lost heavily to Munster at home. Munster, yeah. You'd expect a backlash from Scarlett. Scarlett's are the best-funded Welsh team, full of internationals. They really had a bad day at the office last weekend. I expect them to come with a, you know, show a, you know, a lot of spirit, a lot of fight. I don't think Leinster are flying at the moment. Leinster have won their three games, but they seem to be playing a little bit within themselves, so, you know, it mightn't be as a formality, but you know, if Sexton plays, we haven't seen the Leinster team yet. Sexton is absolutely on fire at the moment, and when he's on the pitch, Leinster looks so much better. So I look at Leinster win, but it mightn't be a hammering.
Yeah, and they are our own two provincial sides together. Munster against Connacht, that looks like a juicy enough fixture. It's on RT2 and also RT Radio as well. Tomlin Park on Saturday. How do you see that going?
Oh, look at you. Connacht is so frustrating for their fans and for their coaches, Andy Friend. I mean, last year they lost more games at home than they won, which is completely different than how Connacht have been going over the last 4 or 5 years, where Sports Ground was a fortress. They had a great win against the Bulls. They were expected to beat the Dragons and they just didn't show. And, you know, Andy Friend was perplexed by it. He said the energy levels, the training was good. He couldn't see it coming, but they just couldn't get out of second gear and lost and deserved to lose. Dragons were good. So they did win in Thomond Park last year. They won in the RDS and they won in Ravenhill for the first time ever to win all three. But unless Munster underperform, Connacht are well able to win it, but you just can't back them with any confidence given how poor they were last weekend.
Yeah. So, home wins all three?
Home wins all three for me, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's the United Rugby Championship kind of encapsulated there. With Bernard, the women's Lions, how close are we to getting a women's Lions team?
Well, I think the starting point is what's happened now with a working group to study the feasibility. Obviously, you know, Niamh Briggs and Anthony Eddy are the Irish representatives on that. It's a very strong group in terms of, power, experience, expertise. So they will look at it. It's hard to see how it could wash its face financially, to be honest. And also at the moment, you would say if it was picked on merit, it would be 90% made up of England. But is that the stimulus that Wales, Scotland and Ireland need to really, you know, progress and catch or make strides against England? You know, it could be. Is that the stimulus that makes the game grow in parts of the countries involved that it isn't at the moment? I'm not sure. But I do think any... I suppose working group that's looking at how they can grow a women's game and make it stronger is to be applauded, and they may actually decide the Lions Tour isn't feasible for now, but this competition would help greatly. So that's, I think, just getting the right people in a room like they're doing there is definitely positive.
Yeah, but like from Ireland's point of view, losing to teams like Spain, surely we'd be getting their own house in order first before they start looking at Lions.
Yeah, so, and I would worry it's a PR stunt, to be honest. You know, they're trying to get positive messages around the domestic game here, the women's game in general, after obviously some shocking results. And I hope it's not that. I hope there's actually real meaning to this. And I agree with you, John. I think, you know, changes and work needs to be put into the domestic game. The league, the All-Ireland League, is it's very much dominated by four teams. Now, you know, there's teams who've got in by invitation or by application, and it's going to take them a little while to get there. And there's great work being done in those clubs, but it's just trying to get more women playing rugby, and then obviously improving the quality of coaching, improving the quality of the competition, to drive standards up. And unfortunately, it looks like we've taken our eye off the ball in that, and we're very much behind. But now we just need to forget about the mistakes that have been made and make sure that the future is brighter.
Yeah, well, COVID obviously kicked the IRFU where it hurts last year financially. Is this a knock-on effect too with the women's?
I think, to be honest, if you ask people involved, this is probably the Irish team that lost to Spain was probably the best prepared Irish team ever in terms of training camps, facilities, kit, coaching, etc. So I think we chased sevens as being some kind of easy fix, put a lot of money into that.
Didn't perform.
The conversion rate, we didn't hit our targets in sevens, or the dual player that we were told was going to be able to play sevens this week and help us beat, you know, anyone on a Saturday in 15s hasn't happened at all. In actual fact, the sevens players have looked uncomfortable in 15s. So, look, I'd say it was a strategic point of view. I feel sorry for the IRFU. They put a lot of money into it. I would argue the money was spent. It was like putting a roof on a house with no foundations. And, you know, they need to re-examine this and listen to the people who are involved in the game, who seem to have tried to engage with them, but get, you know, have been, and nothing to do with COVID. This has gone back 4 or 5 years. People who are passionate about the game haven't been engaged with in a meaningful way, and you haven't harnessed that energy and that passion to help, you know, grow the game. And now, as I said, we're starting in a horrendous, we've missed out on a World Cup, which is disastrous, but it needs to stop now, and action needs to be taken.
Sure. November internationals finally coming up pretty shortly. Ireland kick off against Japan, don't they? Wales are playing the All Blacks.
Yeah, and that's a messy one because, I mean,
no Premiership players.
Yeah, it's outside the test window regulations. So there's a regulation that for, you know, Six Nations, June tests and November, players have to be released from their clubs to play international rugby.
Yeah.
Wales have thrown in an extra test in the Millennium Stadium to Principality Stadium to bring much needed funds in. The All Blacks are a huge draw, and as we'll see in Dublin, but it falls outside the test window, so the English clubs will not be allowed, but the Premiership rugby will stop them, because even if they wanted to, they won't be allowed, and they've got some injuries. Any players playing in France won't be released. So yeah, Wayne Pivac has a job to do. Now, there's still a lot of players playing in Wales, but certainly playing the All Blacks without 7 or 8 of your key players, like Dan Bigger, Toby Faltow, etc., is going to be difficult.
Sure. Well, listen, thanks for joining us. Are you off to any games the weekend?
Yeah, I'm in Ravenhill tomorrow night for RT, and I'm down in Limerick on Saturday night, so yeah, lucky.
Okay, we'll certainly enjoy it. After the break, we're going to talk about the Irish men's cricket team. They've qualified for the T20 World Cup, and they play their final game today against Bangladesh in the warm-up, which they won. 21-year-old wicketkeeper Neil Rock. We'll have a word with him after this break.
Game on UFM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
John Kenny in for Marie tonight till 7 o'clock. You can still contact us on 51551. That's 51551. That is our text number. Ireland's men's side continue their preparations today ahead of the start of cricket's T20 World Cup next week. 33-run win against Bangladesh in Abu Dhabi. That was a very good victory for them. And it's 2 wins out of 2, having beaten Papua New Guinea during the week. They won the toss, chose to bat, made 177 for the loss of just 3 wickets. Gareth Delaney top scored a magnificent 88 of only 50 deliveries. In response, Bangladesh were all out for 144. Well, Ireland would play the Netherlands as they start the finals next Monday. They're in a second round qualifying group that includes the Dutch, Sri Lanka and also Namibia. The top two will go through to the competition proper. And one man who will be involved is the 21-year-old Rush wicketkeeper Neil Rock, and I caught up with him earlier on today.
Game on 2FM.
Following Irish cricket, obviously, for a while. I know you play your club cricket with Rush, and to be part of all of this, are you pinching yourself to believe that you're actually sitting in a hotel room talking to a reporter at a World Cup?
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, to start the year, I probably wasn't expecting to be here. for now being here. It's great. Hopefully we can put in a few good performances and qualify, get out of the group. But yeah, taking each day as it comes, I think.
You think you can qualify?
Yeah, absolutely.
What gives you that assurance that you can qualify? What's the team's feelings? Obviously, you've got the Dutch, you've got games against Sri Lanka and Namibia to come. Sri Lanka and Namibia are obviously going to be tricky games, but you know the Dutch quite well, actually, because they played a series against them this year.
Yeah, I wasn't part of that series. Haven't played the Dutch before for the senior side, but saying that, we know we've a good team. We've plenty of match winners in our side. And I think T20 on your day, anyone can win your game. It only takes one or two guys to get going with the bat or with the ball, and you can turn teams over.
Do you prefer T20 or the 50 in the longer version of the game?
I'm certainly more comfortable with T20 cricket at the minute. Something I'm happy enough trying to take the game on straight away. 50 over cricket is something I want to get slightly better at and keep developing, but yeah, probably T20 at the minute.
Have you got the gloves?
Oh, I've had the gloves since but you don't know. Come Monday, we'll see.
It's one thing from Ireland's point of view is that they have now competition for the gloves. I mean, obviously, Niall O'Brien, Gary Wilson obviously took home from him in the latter years. Wasn't a lot of competition, I suppose, around for the gloves, does it? It seems to be a lot more these days. So you've got to be on your toes, don't you?
You do, certainly. I know, obviously, Lorcan's played a lot of games for Ireland. And whoever gets the gloves come Monday will certainly be ready to go. And whoever doesn't have it will try and put the other one under pressure. I think it's something you need. And if you want to be a good team, you need guys putting each other under pressure all around the squad, not just with the gloves, but with bat and ball as well.
Tell us, how are you bedding in with the squad? Are you enjoying the whole experience?
Yeah, I've loved it. Spent a good amount of time with the lads over the summer. Obviously, we've been in the bubble the last few weeks, not just since we've been here. But yeah, certainly feel comfortable now around the group.
Yeah, a lot of players I know, as I said, having been in bubbles before with the Irish cricket team, find it difficult. I know John Mooney professed to being depressed, falling into depression about being away from home for so long. I know it's obviously early doors for yours and for you, and you know, obviously you're just starting your young career. But it can be tough. How have you found that whole experience? Do you think it's something that you can deal with going throughout your career, or for the moment it's just novel, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, there is still that kind of novelty aspect of it. I don't think the travelling, I think, is fine. It's more so the COVID bubbles. That probably aren't sustainable for too much longer. I mean, we're in a lovely hotel here, but there's not an awful lot we can do. We can't leave and go out for a walk. We've pool at certain times, but obviously we'll get through it and we'll enjoy it because we're at a World Cup. But going forward, I don't think it's something that's going to be sustainable.
No, because obviously you weren't involved in the England series, which started this whole process off really in Southampton last year. A lot of your teammates would have been even in Holland and England, and now at the World Cup, continuous bubbles. It can take its toll, can't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, not being able to see your family and stuff is something that's not for everyone. But yeah, as I said, it's the COVID bubble more so than being away for me.
And you in constant contact with your family. What's the family feel about you being at the World Cup?
Yeah, speak to most days. I think my parents will come out. Obviously, we won't be able to see them because they'd have to do the same quarantine we done. But yeah, I think they'll be here, as will a few parents, I think.
Yeah, so they're actually going to allow spectators into the grounds, are they?
Yeah, I think Dubai is full capacity, and then the other grounds are 75, maybe, or some sort of limited capacity.
I wish you the very best of luck, Neil. It's good talking to you. And we see you out in the field of play, and we're all rooting for you back here. And thanks for talking to us.
Cheers, John. Thank you.
Game on 2FM. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour. 2FM.
Game on, Iron America.
And a very good evening to Jeff Shepherd, my old pal. How are you doing, Jeff?
No, I'm doing great, John. Good to hear your voice, man.
Thanks very much. John in for Marie until 7 o'clock tonight. And Jeff Shepherd on the line. Vaccines, emails, Hornets. It's all going on, isn't it? John Gruden resigning as head coach of the LA Raiders following reports that emails he wrote over a 10-year period included racist, misogynistic and anti-gay language. I'm not surprised he's lost his job. Are you?
No. Look, the New York Times, I think, you know, had a story on Friday about a batch of emails where he had referenced, he made a reference to Damora Smith, who is the NFL Players Association, you know, top guy who represents the players in all of the league discussions when it comes to the union and the owners. And he used obviously some, you know, called racist language and I believe a nickname or something like that is what it started as. And it just spiraled from there. And by Monday evening, I mean, a whole nother batch of emails came out and it continued, you know, it had more language and moved on beyond, you know, a quote unquote, just some racist things to, as you mentioned, some, you know, anti-gay and, you know, the move that the league's been making over the last couple of years when in the diversity ranks and just not agreeing with it. And look, John, it sprung out of some emails that he had sent to Bruce Allen, who at the time was the president of the team that was called the Washington Redskins, which is now the Washington Football Team. And I know you've been paying attention to that because I know that's the team you've always followed. And all of these emails were part of this 650,000 documents that have been involved in this 10-month investigation. And we've spoken about this on the show before. Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, has basically, you know, had to kind of take a back seat. I believe his wife is running the team and or is the de facto owner kind of in his place right now. He was fined. They were fined $10 million. But of all of this, one of the attorneys that's been arguing for more of the emails to be released is in this entire investigation that's going on about the culture of the Washington football team and some of the things that the cheerleaders have had to go through and just, you know, the way they've been treated. The only person to lose their job so far is the head football coach of the Raiders, which doesn't really make any sense. Now, he may not be the only one. He may not be the last one. But right now, he has been the target of, for whatever reason, you know, someone at the NFL releasing these emails to reporters, and it has cost John Gruden his job with the second time with the Raiders.
Yeah, well, I don't have an answer simply for him, but how much of a moron do you have to be? I mean, he was employed by ESPN as the lead analyst for Monday Night Football as well at the time he was sending the emails.
Sure, and that's really one of the things I think that is really, I don't say it's confusing, it's just the kind of, I don't understand it is. I mean, you are a coach. You're a former coach at the time. You have, you've won a Super Bowl. You have aspirations to be a head coach either in the NFL or potentially in the college ranks. He's saying all these things. He's also taking shots at the commissioner. And look, I mean, love him or leave him, you know, you can argue whether or not Roger Goodell's a good commissioner, you know, all day. I mean, some of the decisions he's made are boneheaded. But if this guy's potentially going to be, you know, not really your boss, but he's the guy who controls the league one day if you're becoming a head coach again, and you're emailing another president in the league and bashing the commissioner, it's stupid. I mean, it beyond all of the other stuff, yeah, it is.
Well,
it's just stupid.
The commissionership, the fact of the tone that he was using in terms of what we mentioned in the outset there, racist, misogynistic, homophobic, why on earth would you stick them into emails?
Again, it's just stupid. It's communications from just a different era. And think about this, John. I mean, the Raiders were celebrated.
You wouldn't write that in a letter.
Of course. I mean, but the Raiders were celebrated this offseason, you know, when their defensive lineman, Carl Nassib, comes out as the first openly homosexual player in the NFL.
Yes.
He's on the Raiders team.
Yep.
I mean, and this is this is what John Gruden's saying. Nassib had to take a day off this week because he just couldn't handle it, you know, which, I mean, was understandably so. So I don't think we've seen the last of this. I think there's going to be more that comes out from this investigation. It has to. It's been 10 months. It's 650,000 emails and documents. I mean, there's more here. Now they're just trying to figure out, you know, what do they do with all this information and what's the rest of the fallout?
Yeah, but Gruden is just crawling at the moment. He's saying, I'm embarrassed by what's out there. I certainly never meant it for it to sound that bad. Yeah, right. You mentioned the Washington football team as well. They're not exactly covering themselves in glory either because some of their cheerleaders in the past have said that they were allegedly distributing a secret uncensored video of cheerleader photo shoot to executives. And they're now, obviously, and rightfully so, very unhappy about all of this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, again, so this is, I think this was one of the main kind of big reasons that this investigation kind of got tipped off all in the first place. It was just the culture of, you know, the way people were treated, and specifically, you know, some of these women. And so, yeah, so, you know, they're talking about, like, look, you know, we kind of thought this was out there. Now we're having to go through all of this all over again, you know, reliving some of these things. And, you know, again, I think that is going to be part of, if not the next wave, it's going to continue to be the crux of this story. I don't think this is over. Washington, they've changed their name and they've paid their fine, and they're, you know, Dan Snyder's trying to quote unquote clean things up. I just don't think it's as simple as that. There's still more to this story.
Okay. Before we wrap things up, the story from the NBA about Kyrie Irving saying he's going to quote unquote do what's best for me by refusing the COVID-19 vaccine, a move that will see him sidelined from the NBA. This is what Stephen A. Smith had to say about on the sports commentator.
It's the stupidest thing that I think I've encountered with NBA players. Like, you gonna sit up there and not play and not take a vaccine that evidently it's not you. You don't have a problem with it, according to the reports. You just want to give a voice to the voiceless? Really?
29 years of age, and he doesn't want to play because he doesn't want to take a COVID vaccine.
So, look, John, he can't. So he plays for the Brooklyn Nets. They are based in New York City. New York City and the state of New York is one of the most strict places in America. You know, you have to have at least one shot of the vaccine before you can, you know, go into large indoor arenas.
This is no
arenas.
Ordinary player. This is a seven-time All-Star player.
Oh, sure, and I'm not defending it. I'm just trying to give a little bit of the background here is, you know, the local laws in New York are strict. I mean, there are players in other sports in other parts of the country that don't have to go through this. You look at the NHL and the Hockey League, they just came out. They said they've got 4 players who have not taken the vaccine. It's because they have to go to Canada, and if you haven't been vaccinated in Canada, you've got to wait 14 days before you can go into the country. So it's all local and it's all regional. Kyrie Irving has said he would rather not get the vaccine, not play in the home games. Also, they play the Knicks twice in New York, so that's 43 games he's not going to play.
Yeah, but hasn't this franchise said, listen, if you're not playing in the home games, you're not vaccinated, you ain't playing the away games either.
That's exactly right, because they have to jump through too many hoops to take an unvaccinated person with them. The NFL has put a lot of these same kind of protocols into place. The vaccine's out. It's free. If you don't take it, we're not giving you, you know, time off. We're not going to push your games back. We're not going to give you a forfeit or a time to make things up. Get the vaccine or don't. And so far, to this point, Kyrie Irving has stood firm, and he said he's not getting the vaccine. Now, look, he's about to pass up $17 million, John. We will see how long this lasts.
On a point of no principle, because the NBA said recently that any player who chooses not to comply with local vaccination mandates will not be paid for the games they miss. So he's biting off his nose to spite his face. And I guarantee you, if he went on holidays somewhere, deep as Africa or somewhere like that, where you have to be vaccinated for other things, he'd do it, I'd say. This COVID thing stance is just, it beggars belief.
Yeah, we've talked about this for a couple of months now, you know, doing these hits and doing these shows, and there are still a couple of NFL players that have not gotten it. It hasn't bitten anybody yet, but they've kind of have voiced the same opinions. We're starting to see more and more companies implement here in the States, implement a vaccine mandate. We're waiting to see what the federal government is going to do. He's one of he's one of one in the NBA. He's not the only one in America. This is going to continue to play out.
Yeah, well, I can just tell you folks that a good friend of mine who was vax hesitant didn't take it and nearly died with it. So thankfully he is okay. In terms of the NFL, finally, how's the season shaping up? Who's top of the pops at the moment?
Yeah, so look, I mean, it's right now the Buffalo Bills went into Kansas City last Sunday night and steamrolled over the Chiefs. The Chiefs
have
got some struggles.
Yeah, Kansas are 2-3, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they've struggled. I mean, they're having some problems on defense. The Bills have looked phenomenal. They lost a weird game in week one to the Steelers, who are just not very good. You've got Tampa and the Rams in the NFC continue to really look like they're the best, even though the Cardinals are still undefeated. And they did beat the Rams. I'll give them all the credit in the world there. But, yeah, I mean, right now it looks like it's Buffalo and maybe the Ravens in the AFC, and I think right now it's Tampa and the Rams in the NFC. The Dallas Cowboys are Dallas.
Yeah.
You're right. Dallas is playing really well. And you know, they threw it like 60 times in week one, but since then they've been running the ball and pounding it, and their defense is greatly improved because it couldn't have gotten any worse from last year. So, you know, they're definitely going to be in the mix as well.
Okay, Jeff Shepherd, Iron America, thanks for joining us on the line. I'm John Kenny. Certainly hope what you enjoyed tonight or what you heard tonight on the program. We're back tomorrow from 7 o'clock, and it's Tara Kumar up next. From John Kenny, till the next time, bye for now.
Live across the nation and on the RTE radio player, this is RTE 2FM.